Paul Andrews with the Business Bunker.
I'm very good, thank you.
And thank you for bringing another brilliant guest to us on the Counting House, and we do appreciate it. And we love you coming to see us once a month. How's things in the world of Riff? Yes, Bird?
I do have a really serious thing to talk to you about, because you're Rift.
Okay.
It's coming up to that time of year. Yeah. Yes, everybody's getting ready for Christmas. How should we prepare our businesses entering into 2018 ready for the accounts?
Well, it's a bit different, isn't it? Because if you're a business, as in a limited company, your company year end could be any time at all. So it's more about planning for what you're going to do in 2018, what your targets are, how that's going to fit, where your cash flow fits. But I think what you've also got to remember is that you personally have always got that April to April tax deadline.
Mm.
So you've got until the 31st of January to do your tax return, regardless of whether you're a director or a sole trader, that's when it fits.
Do it now, Letty, would
do
you
it,
say?
If you haven't already done it, yes.
Yes,
seriously.
That's what I really wanted to get hold of.
Don't leave it till the last minute for two reasons. One is, if you've got a bill to pay, you want to know now what it is, if not before, what it is. But also you need to be talking to your accountant, because if you're a limited company, it could be this is the last year that we've got the 5,000 dividend without paying tax. It goes down to 2 next year. So, you know, if you can encompass that into your tax return this year because you've made enough profit, you should be looking at that. But you can't say that as a blasé statement. You've got to look at the overall situation. You can't just say, oh, I heard Nettie on the radio and she said put 5,000 of dividends through. That's not the way to do it. You've got to have those conversations and do it soon.
Absolutely.
There you go. That was off the top of my head. That was a sensible answer.
It was. I'm amazed.
Me too. But yeah, that's what you need to do. And actually start planning it. You know, when that April bit comes along, you know, you all know that it's next January that's going to happen again. So plan it in. Get it in there.
Yeah.
At least then you know in advance.
Because it's so easy to get caught up in Christmas and forget about this and blah, 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 and we're going to... And then all of a sudden it's smack bang in your face in January.
Well, people put it off because they hate doing it.
Mm.
Yeah. We all hate doing it.
Well,
we all
we'll
hate filling
it
out.
You.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. That's what I was just about to say.
Well, get on, someone say
to do
it.
Get someone to do it for you.
Who
don't
does
put
yours?
It off.
Do you do yours?
No, you
oh,
do
no,
mine.
Oh, no, we do yours.
You do mine.
There you go. Do you do yours, Neil?
No.
No, do we do ours? Yours? Yeah,
you do
there you go. There you go.
Yeah.
That's how it works.
Cool.
Did you want to hear something else I've been doing, though?
Yeah, go for it.
I know, I just wanted to tell you, actually, because you and I, Paul, have a shared soapbox on young people, don't we? And
we
get them into work and apprenticeships and all this sort of stuff. And about 2 weeks ago, I was lucky enough to go and do a workshop at the University of Greenwich for the business school. Very, very interesting. Had a group of about 45 students, most of which are setting up their own businesses. And they've got some great ideas, different things. Maybe it can be their dissertation that they've realised was a really clever idea. One guy, I can't give it away because he's literally just had his dissertation turned into a patent, which he's now developing into something.
Fantastic.
You know, this is a guy of, what, 22 years old, and he's local. He's,
well,
you know, I've gone to Greenwich to see him to find that he lives in Canterbury.
Right. Okay.
So, you know, this is quite interesting in that these people are really out there.
Yeah, they are.
But they do these wonderful courses, they've got a degree, and it's still the same old stuff. How to put a business plan together, how to look at cash flow, how to look at X, Y, Z.
Business 101.
So it's again and again and again, that stuff just isn't getting in the right places.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter where it is.
And it's just like, though, we were discussing with self-assessment and all the rest of it and tax returns. The problem is everybody hates doing that stuff.
Yep.
Everybody hates cash flow and everybody hates doing their books and everybody hates VAT registration and everybody, you know, nobody really likes it unless that's what your business is, you know, unless you're an accountant or a bookkeeper or, you know, something similar. Everybody puts it off and puts it up because we go into business for the excitement of doing whatever it is that's exciting us. But of course, you have to have all that structure behind you and you have to have it up front. The big mistake that people make is not being prepared right up front. You know, they go, well, I'll do that later, I'll do that later. I'll get up and running first, and I'll do that later. You can't. If you put it in place right up front, right now, you're going to build a successful business very quickly.
Of course you are.
Yeah, absolutely.
It just makes a difference. And
absolutely.
Talk to the right people. Don't start me off on that one.
I'll make the number up because it's easier, because I can't remember.
Say it convincingly.
Yeah, but I'll say it very convincingly. Yeah. I'm here to tell you...
I'm believing you already.
That 73.6% of businesses fail Not because they ran out of business, but because they ran out of money. So cash flow is crucially important. And you can't know what you've got if you don't manage it.
I heard a horror story not long ago where someone was told, apparently by a business advisor, I don't know if that's true or not, but they didn't need to worry about any numbers for 18 months because you wouldn't have to put your accounts in until then. Oh, excellent.
Okay, well, spend then.
Off you go. Enjoy. I'll help you with your liquidation.
I love advice like that. That really does work.
The best. Yeah.
Anyway, who have you brought along to talk to us today, Nettie?
Well, you almost called me young Nettie then, didn't you?
Which I did.
Was quite sweet. Untrue, but quite sweet. I've brought Neil along today. I've known Neil for probably a couple of years, haven't I?
I think so.
And I'll let Neil tell you what he does. I'm going to let Neil tell you what he does.
Because he does it better than me. It's a good
and
idea.
And I can be quiet and make sure the bird's all right.
She's okay. She's okay.
I'm working.
She's gracefully composed herself.
I'm working on Twitter.
Excellent.
But Neil's got quite a story to tell.
And cool. So let's talk to Neil.
Good opinions.
Let's talk to Neil. So welcome to the Business Bunker, Mr. Neil Page of Horizon Vehicle Leasing. Neil, as Nettie said, thank you for joining us, first and foremost. Why don't you give us a quick overview of you and what you do, and then we'll dive into the nitty-gritty.
Well, my name's Neil Page, and I, along with a couple of colleagues, run a business called Horizon Vehicle Leasing. We're a vehicle broker. Well, what does that mean? Very much like a mortgage broker, we find deals on cars and commercial vehicles, and we package that together with a finance deal, whether that be some sort of purchase finance, some sort of lease finance. We offer that out to businesses and to personal customers, whether it be a car or commercial vehicle, and really that's what we do.
Absolutely. Now, I want you to clear up a couple of things for me to start with, because this is important. Years ago, my accountants used to have a go at me about, you know, you should never lease a car, you should always buy it and all the rest of it. Of course, things have changed, and so now they go, don't you dare buy a car. Because they're like that, accountants. They're so fickle.
We don't want you to really know what's going on.
So give us a quick overview of the differences between contract hire, balloon payment leases, purchase. What are the different options, and how do they differentiate themselves as far as a business is concerned?
Well, obviously, you've got sort of two different methods of funding. You've got a purchase, or you've got a lease. In a purchase, you will eventually take ownership of the vehicle if you want to. You normally put something down as a deposit. You pay over a sort of monthly payment. And if you do it sort of as a higher, straightforward hire purchase, in that agreement, you own the vehicle, and that's it. You can have a lump sum at the end, which means at the end of the agreement, you have to pay that lump sum, and you keep the vehicle. Leasing is a slightly different, where you will never actually own the vehicle. You put down an initial payment, you pay your monthly payment. At the end of the agreement, that vehicle goes back to the finance company. It's based on a period of time, so typically 2, 3, 4 years, and it's based on a mileage. So you tell the leasing company what mileage you're going to do, 5, 10, 15,000, or anything in between. And that your rental is based on those parameters, so the period of time that you want the vehicle over, and the mileage you're going to do within that time period.
Cool. And that's typically called a contract hire?
Typically a contract hire. Really what a contract hire is where at the end of the agreement, the car goes back to the finance company with no effect on from the company that's leasing the vehicle in terms of residual value or what the vehicle's worth.
And in your opinion, these kind of lease deals have become more and more prevalent over the recent years. And certainly I acquire nearly all of my cars in that way these days because it just makes sense. But for you, what was the turning point? What made that happen? Why have we moved more towards personal contract hire and leases rather than buying vehicles outright? Is there a particular reason?
There's several reasons. I mean, one of the reasons is cost. It's a lot more cost effective. I mean, in terms of, if you buy a vehicle for cash, or if you buy it on a HP type of agreement, which is your more traditional finance, the monthly costs or the actual outlay is quite substantial. With a contract hire based facility, it's normally a small initial outlay. Your monthly payments are relatively low. It means you can have a very expensive vehicle generally for a relatively small monthly payment. So it's the cost base of it. The other side of it is certainly and more relevant now. It's that when you're looking at buying a vehicle and in 3 years' time you come to sell it, you have no idea what that vehicle is going to be worth.
Mm.
So a lot of people look at contract hire as being a way of guaranteeing a fixed cost for that vehicle over a period of time.
Absolutely.
You don't have to worry about whether the vehicle's going to plummet in value, and particularly at the moment with diesel vehicles, the uncertainty,
absolutely,
hybrids,
yeah,
electric vehicles. You know, you can avoid all of that by having it on a lease, which gives you more certainty.
Yeah, diesel was a classic, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You know, the government said, you've got to buy diesels. We all bought diesels, and they went, you don't want to buy diesels.
Exactly.
Love them. Okay, I mean, the vehicle market, and I hope you don't mind me kind of bombarding you with these kind of questions, and if, you know, it's not your field, just say, no, I don't know. But, you know, there's when you're trying to buy vehicles nowadays, there's so many things to take into consideration. So you've got the CO2 of a car, you've got benefit in kind to take into account. So if you're buying a car through a company and you want to buy anything decent, forget it, because your tax bill is going to go through the roof.
Yeah.
You've got hybrids, you've got fully electric cars, you've got congestion charges. There's all kinds of things going on. And I saw the other day, I mean, this, I don't go to London very often because I just try and avoid the place as much as I can these days, even though I'm a Londoner. But, you know, you see these congestion charge things. And I was talking to someone the other day and they went, oh, I can't take my van to London. Oh, why? And I went, well, I'm not allowed. The CO2 level. I don't know what. Do you know what they're talking about?
Yeah, well, I mean, they are. I mean, certainly London is looking at changing the way in which people drive into London, whether it be commercial vehicles or cars. They've got the low congestion charge.
Mm.
And in 2019, they're looking to change that to ULED, an ultra-low emission zone. Basically, any sort of cars or vans that are older in terms of diesel vehicles that are older than about 4 years old at that time, petrol vehicles slightly older, but would be charged £12.50 a day just to drive into London. That's on top of the congestion charge. So
On top of the congestion charge. He's selling it to me, isn't he? Yeah,
you want
to
need
people that are driving older vehicles, you know, not what they call Euro 6, for instance, and diesel, it's going to be extremely expensive.
Right.
And if you drove into London every single day, for instance, it costs you about £7,500 a year just to travel into London, forgetting any parking, forgetting any fuel costs, like that. So it's really to try and make sure that we, from the point of view that there's low emissions, low CO2s, increasing the quality of the air and reducing air pollution.
Right.
But it's based on the CO2s of the actual vehicles that people are driving.
Okay, cool. All right, well, thank you for that.
£7,500, though.
I know.
You haven't even parked it.
That's on top of parking.
Yeah. And then on top of that, you get the parking charges, the speeding fines.
Oh, yeah.
Yada, yada, yada. Because everywhere in London now is a 20-mile-an-hour zone.
But businesses won't have that, will they?
Sorry?
Businesses.
No.
£7,500.
It's bonkers. I, you know, the biggest issue there is, okay, you can stop people driving into London from a commuting point of view, but what about deliveries and stuff like that?
Well, you can see a time where, you know, sort of lorries deliver to a depot outside of the zone.
And you have to come and get it.
And it's collected by an electric vehicle or whatever,
but
they're looking at expanding that zone to the North Circular.
Right.
So, you know, it'll be a huge sort of area which will come to that.
Talking about electric vehicles, that's something I want to kind of discuss.
Okay.
We have virtually every manufacturer now has a hybrid of some kind. So kind of what I want to talk to you about is what a hybrid is, what a fully electric vehicle is, where these things stand at the moment. I mean, I was reading the other day, I've been looking very heavily at buying an electric vehicle, just to, you know, to check it out. I was on the point of acquiring myself a Tesla. But I actually drive a Porsche normally, and then Porsche have just announced the Mission E, so that's thrown everything into a cocked hat, because what you're starting to see now is people leapfrogging. It looks absolutely stunning. But let's go back. You know, what's a hybrid? Is it worth having a hybrid? What's a fully electric vehicle? Yada, yada, yada. Let's explore that.
A hybrid is what it says. It's a mixture of two things. It's an electric motor with either a typically mostly a petrol or diesel engine,
yep.
and you just put the two together. So you've got your standard petrol engine, and then you've got a battery that's charged normally from the engine itself. So when you're driving along, when you're braking, that sort of thing, it charges the battery up, and the car will drive typically, you know, 5-9 miles, something like that, quite a low distance just on the battery.
Right,
and
okay.
as soon as you start to accelerate it, the petrol engine cuts in.
Right.
You've got a what they call a plug-in hybrid. Exactly the same thing, but rather than relying just on the engine to charge up the battery, as it says, you plug it in overnight, you charge it up, and it gives you a lot more distance on the battery alone. So okay. you could maybe do 30 miles or something like that with a plug-in hybrid.
Right.
And then, of course, you've got the full electric, which is pure and simply electric motors. You know, the name suggests, like the Tesla, Nissan Leaf, Renault Zoe, those sort of type of vehicles.
Yeah.
So, you know, those are the differences. And, of course, if you're looking at a hybrid vehicle, because you can drive it on the battery alone, the CO2s are much lower than they are on a, you know, typical petrol-only or diesel-only vehicle.
I mean, what's the benchmark for CO2 output these days? It used to be below 110 kilograms per whatever it is.
Yeah, I mean, it is changing for the actual CO2s and where they fit and the taxation, and that's going to sort of continue to move over the next sort of few years.
Yeah.
I think it's down to 75.
Right.
Grams per kilometre is what they're looking at to change that and get. But every single year now until 2021, I think they've planned it out, which is basically the ceiling is going to get lower and lower and lower.
Absolutely.
If you had the same vehicle with the same CO2, you'll be paying more and more tax on that vehicle as time goes on.
The interesting thing, though, is the government were giving incentives for electric vehicles, but they're kind of stopping that now as well.
Yeah, there's still some incentives around, but the money has dropped.
Yeah.
You know, I think what they've done is that they gave that to kickstart the market to make sure that people were buying, because the vehicles were and still are fairly expensive.
Yeah.
And they have reduced that as time has gone, but I think we've seen that in lots of things where taxation is, you know, they put it in there up front to make people to go in that direction, and of course they then reduce the amount they're giving.
Yeah.
So, but it's, you know, it's becoming the norm anyway. You see manufacturers like Volvo announcing that they won't be doing any petrol or diesel only engines. You know. It's certainly got that way, and particularly when they've announced that I think it's 2040 that there will be no petrol or diesel only engines made, in the UK or being able to be made and be driven. That's sort of
going
to change.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? But it's like they are kind of forcing, and now the manufacturers have adopted going fully electric. Of course, being the government, they have absolutely no plan for generating electricity that we've got to top it up with. Which is going to be a laugh, isn't it?
I sat and worked out just as a sort of, quick calculation. And at the moment, there's about 37.5 million vehicles registered in the UK. If you just take, let's say, there's 10 million of those they want to charge at any one day, and typically at the moment, something like a Zoe or whatever, about 25 kilowatts. Well, that's sort of 250 gigawatts of energy a day,
which is more than we produce.
Three nuclear power stations, just to charge a quarter of the vehicles on the road.
Yeah. And, of course, we're not building any nuclear power stations.
No. And that's, if you had your Tesla, which is 100 kilowatts, four times the charge. So, it's all a good idea.
There's a little bit of a flaw in that.
It's the infrastructure around it. And, you know, if you live in London and you live in a terraced house and you've typically got your, no garage, you've got your road, some trees, and then you park on the road, well, in theory, every single one of those spots will need to have a charging station.
Yeah.
The infrastructure just isn't there at the moment to cope with that.
Yeah, we need to grow trees with charging points in them.
There's an R&D idea.
Make it happen. Yeah. I've thought it up, Nessie. You just do it. Okay.
Okay, all right,
I can't do everything.
No, me neither.
If you don't mind, Neil, what I'd like to explore, because this is something that gets more confusing to people, which is acquiring a business vehicle and BIK, benefit in kind. Can we kind of talk about what that means and how that works?
Yeah.
And also, does Horizon, do you provide vehicles for businesses and personal, or is it only
businesses and personal?
Cool. So give us a flavour for what this BIK thing is all about.
Okay. Well, BIK, benefit in kind. Mm. Any sort of vehicle you have, so if you're a limited company and you're an employer of that company, whether you be a director, whatever, you pay a benefit in kind. And that's based on two things, really. It's based on the value of the vehicle, what they call P11D of the vehicle.
Yeah.
So that's the list price of the vehicle, less road for license, less first registration fee, and the CO2 that the vehicle produces.
Can I just throw something at you when you're saying that? Because this catches a lot of people as well. It isn't what you paid for the vehicle. It's what it is. So if you buy a second-hand vehicle for $5,000, but the list price was $30,000, it's $30,000 you're paying, not the $5,000.
That's correct. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it is based on the list price of the vehicle.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what you buy it for, what discount you get on that vehicle, it is the list price.
Yeah, okay.
You're saying based on the CO2, and it's basically based on where that CO2 and as time goes on, and say it sits in the percentage. So it depends on the CO2, you're a certain percentage of the value of that vehicle, and as time goes on, CO2 remains the same, but the percentage you pay as the tax is changing increases. So year on year, you're paying more for having the same car.
Absolutely. Okay. For me personally, I don't have company cars of my own anymore. I always have them personally, and I still have a personal contract hire lease for my car, because that's economically more viable. From your point of view, and it's your opinion, and you're entitled to express your opinion. I mean, for you, what do you think people should be looking at? Do you think a small business is better off having their cars personal or business? I know that's a really hard question.
It does depend. It depends on what the business is looking to achieve. If you're a director of the business, if you choose the right, you can choose whatever vehicle you want. If you choose the right vehicle, actually the taxation can be, if you choose a hybrid vehicle, can be actually better necessarily, because you've got to think about the fact that it's not just, if it's your business, it's not just the personal tax you pay, but by offsetting the amount you're paying for that vehicle against profits of the business, actually, you might find that it actually works out slightly better for you.
Yeah.
Always speak to your accountant, like Riff,
who'll
be able to give you the best advice, but at the end of the day, it does depend.
They told me to get a bike.
Yeah. Well, there is that.
And then ride it.
High
performance, big engine vehicle, then you're probably going to want to buy that personally.
Yeah.
If it's something that's going to be more economical, or something like a hybrid vehicle, then actually you can be better off actually putting it through the business.
Sure.
Because the taxation on those type of vehicles is less, which means that actually personal tax is not as bad as taking the cash out of the business. So it will vary, cool, individual circumstances, and the amount, the particular vehicle that you choose.
Fantastic. We've kind of talked about cars. I guess all of this counts for vans and other commercial vehicles and lorries and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I don't want to talk about that because I don't drive a lorry. But of course, an awful lot of people do use vans and, what do they call them, transit type things.
Yeah, right? All sorts of vehicles, transit vans, small little vans.
Cool. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about your actual business now, Horizon Vehicle Leasing. Do you say there were three of you in the business?
Yeah.
And how long have you been going now?
We've been trading since September 2014, so just over 3 years.
Cool.
We're all ex-Mercedes fleet people, so we all ended up meeting and working for Mercedes in the fleet side of it.
Right.
My background is I've about 20 years' experience in the finance and leasing industry.
Right.
I worked for about 10 years as a fleet sales manager for a dealer group.
Right.
My two colleagues have got sort of similar experience. They've worked for dealers and they've worked in the fleet side. And, we were working together and we used to deal with some brokers, and we just sat down one day and thought, we think we can do this a bit better than they do. We've got that experience. We can see what they do. We can see how they work. And we just thought, why don't we do this on our own? And
absolutely.
There we are. I think that all started in about March 2014. We had to go through the process of getting the FCA license, which we couldn't trade without one.
Right.
And that takes you about 5 or 6 months to get to that. So once we had that, we started trading and haven't looked back since.
Fantastic. That's really good. And it's interesting, isn't it? It's funny you should talk about Mercedes. I actually lease a Merc. But it's interesting because a lot of people think that you're going to get the best deal from a dealer. But actually, that's not true, is it?
Not true. I mean, it's funny enough, there was a recent program on Channel 4 Dispatches that looked exactly at that. And they actually went to dealers and talked to dealers about buying vehicles and, you know, what deal they were offered. And in lots of cases, the deal they offered either wasn't very competitive or wasn't sort of financed. A lot of them weren't offering personal leases. They were offering PCPs. And the program concluded that really people weren't being offered the best choice. And if you went to a broker, they thought on a Hyundai i30, I think it was something like 2,500 you were saving. And if it was a Mercedes E-Class, it was about 4,500 you saved by going to a broker rather than dealership.
It's going to make me cry in a minute, isn't it?
Yeah, well, they are. Come to us. But, you know, it's very much, you know, the whole point of us being there, and if we wouldn't survive unless we can get much better deals than the dealers can get in terms of, you know, or it's dealing with those people and those dealers that we know where we can get the best deal. We package out the best finance deal, and then we can offer that out with huge savings to the end user, whether that be an individual, whether that be to a business, and whether that be for a car or commercial vehicle. You know, if you're a small business and you run 2, 3, 4, 5, even 10 cars, you know, you're really treated like a retail customer.
Right.
The person you're probably dealing with at the dealership might be a retail salesman, might be a business salesman. But the deal you will get won't necessarily be the best deal.
Right.
We buy in bulk, we can get the discounts, and we can offer that out to to people.
And presumably you're not manufacturer dependent, you're not locked into any particular manufacturer, and you can source anything
exactly.
for me?
And if someone might come along and say, I'm quite interested in one of those vehicles, and if they think, well, you know, we can offer them alternatives, and say, well, what about one of those?
Yeah.
Exactly, so we can look at the whole range.
Okay.
What's the most exciting car you've ever been asked to quote on?
We've had a quote on Ferrari.
Cool.
that's an interesting one, because Ferrari dealers don't like to sell a vehicle without £60,000 of options they wanted to put on.
They wouldn't
sell a basic car.
Wheels.
No, they wanted to do that. But no, so yeah, we do all sorts. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And the cheapest at the moment?
Ooh.
And would I have heard of it?
Well, we've got a fabulous deal on the BMW at the moment.
It's because you know that's what I want.
I know. It's not one you're looking at.
It's not the one I'm looking at.
Letter, you've just been schmoozed.
Yeah. Again.
Again.
Yeah, do you want me to tell you the detail? Do you want
to know? No, I was more interested in the Merc.
I mean, things like this is what we've got at the moment. It's a 4-series Grand Coupe, which is the 4-door sort of coupe. And we're doing that.
I'm not a car tart, I've got to say. I've got a little Fiat 500. As long as it's a soft top, I'm happy.
Yeah.
But I'm not really. But I love this. I think it's a great idea. I was going to pick up on what you said, Neil. You said that you offered something a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
What was that you actually, the three of you got together and thought, do you know what, we can do this better? What was that gave you that courage to actually step away from that lengthy employment?
Mm. What sort of made us?
Yeah, what was your USP? What was the unique thing that you thought, do you know what, actually, we've got something that will build this business?
I just think it's the sort of, the three of us are all quite different. We have slightly different skills. I mean, I spent 20 years in the finance and leasing industry. And so I dealt particularly with businesses where I had to go in there and look at their accounts, sit down with them, discuss the finance side of it, discuss what vehicles they wanted, talk about CO2, talk about benefit in kind. And I think there's a lot of brokers out there that perhaps don't have those sort of skills. They sort of one-man band, start up on their own and sell a few cars cheap on the internet. And that's not really what we're about. You know, we're about actually sitting down with businesses, particularly local businesses, talking about what their requirements are, looking at their whole fleet and offering suggestions rather than just a cheap deal. And I think that's what makes us unique, the fact that our skill and experience. Between us, we've probably got about 65, 70 years worth of...
So you engage with me rather than just...
Yeah.
What's the pattern of behaviour that you see? I love... This is one of my... I'm curious about the way people behave. What are you seeing in customers that there's a pattern? You go, wow, this is coming through more and more.
I think... Well, I mean, certainly at the moment, if you like, the pattern is uncertainty. Uncertainty about what's happening in the future with diesel engines in particular. That's a hot topic. We deal with a lot of chauffeurs, and chauffeurs are sort of talking to me daily about, you know, the congestion charge in London, what vehicle should I get? You know, I drive into London every day, how's that going to affect me? What should I look at? What vehicles? What do we want? I think, you know, it's uncertainty. It is the biggest thing. I mean, there's uncertainty over Brexit, you know, the B word, and how that would affect prices and that sort of thing. And in some respects, what we do, you know, that uncertainty, we can sort of help with that in terms of, if you buy a vehicle today, if you buy a diesel vehicle, you're not sure what's going to happen to diesel vehicles. Mm. In 3 years' time, I go to sell it and nobody wants it.
Mm.
Well, that's not a problem. You lease a vehicle, that's not the end user's problem. You know, you're going to pay X amount a month over that period of time. At the end of that agreement, go again. If diesel aren't in vogue anymore, we do petrol, we do hybrid, do electric. Mm. But it gets rid of that uncertainty, and I think that's, you know, what we're seeing really is people not knowing what to do, being uncertain as to what's going to happen.
And for me, that all of that uncertainty is one of the major reasons why you lease a car and not buy it.
Exactly.
You know, because you're not tied into it. You know, I've got a diesel at the moment. I've got an AMG Merc diesel on a lease. I don't care. I don't care how far the resale price plummets, because it's not my problem.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, exactly. That is the thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, what we do helps with that, create some certainty from uncertainty.
Absolutely. No, I love it. I love it. We could talk about this forever, because I am a car tart.
He's a petrol head.
I'm a petrol head. I am indeed. Yeah. Neil, thank you for that. Thank you for giving us an overview of all the things. And it's a complex thing now. And of course, it changes because the government changes things on a regular basis now, because they don't really know what they're doing either. I saw a huge report yesterday from some organisation that said actually electric cars are more polluting than some diesel cars. You know,
they still got the issue of what they do with the lithium-ion battery after the 5 years of its life or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's just as a bigger problem is the nuclear thing. You know, we've got this nuclear fuel. What do we do with it?
Yeah.
In a few years' time, what do we do with lithium-ion batteries? It's highly toxic.
Yeah.
Where do we dispose of it?
Absolutely. Yeah. Cool. So it's a complex area.
Indeed.
Just getting about with loads of things. So, again, this personal service that you offer of talking to people without being rude to dealers. The problem with dealers is they have a fixed inventory of things they can flog you. Yeah, so they're not going to talk about things that they don't have in their inventory.
No.
Whereas if we come to someone like you, the world's your inventory. You can, if it's available, you can source it.
Yes, indeed.
Even Ferraris.
Yes, Ferraris, yeah.
Even electric Ferraris. Oh, no such thing.
Hybrid, they do a hybrid, don't they?
Yeah, they do, actually. Yeah, Ferrari do a hybrid, actually. Yeah. It's got an A2 battery in the back, basically.
It's funny you say about Ferrari, but I was looking up Lamborghini this morning.
Yeah.
Not because I'm a car tart, but just the way the business started.
Yeah.
Do you know he started it from tractors?
Yeah, yeah. Oh,
amazing.
You wouldn't believe how some companies started.
I love it.
Do you know Samsung? Started as a fish shop.
No way.
It did. Yeah. Absolutely. And Nokia was a tree growers. Anyway, enough of that.
The knowledge in this room is scary.
Can I just say, people love it, though, because we're getting tweets from people going, counting in Curnow, in Cornish, and they said they're surprised by how much knowledge we share on the Business Bunker. I think you should be. Thank you.
Yeah.
And good night.
And luckily, our guests have useful knowledge.
Yeah.
Unlike us, just have rubbish. Yeah.
Wow, I'm surprised at that.
Neil, thank you so much for that.
You're welcome.
It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. If people want to find out more about Horizon Vehicle Leasing and the services you can offer, how can they do that?
They can do it by our website, which is www.horizonvehicleleasing.co.uk. They can call us. Just give the number.
Yeah, go for it.
01233 754 800.
Fantastic.
That, I was also going to say, have you seen there's a tweet from Jackie Offin?
No, go for it.
Telling Neil off, saying basically, you didn't tell us you were going on the radio today, so she's bad mouthing you across Twitter.
Right, okay.
Oh, that's typical. Thanks for that, Jackie. Neil, thank you so much for that.
Thank you.
There is a link on the Kent Business Radio website to Horizon Vehicle Leasing, so you can just click on the link on the radio website and that will stay on there forever. For the moment, Neil, thank you so much for that. Really interesting, really fascinating. All power to you. Thank you for joining us on the Business Bunker show. And Nettie, thank you for introducing Neil to us. That brings us to an end of another show.
Paul Andrews with the Business Bunker.